Okay, we continue, and this could be our sort of last class in this area about the Shabbos table and kitchen. We've covered just about everything there is to cover regarding preparing and cleaning up from the meal. There's two more topics. One is called muktzah that we'll deal with, and then a smaller topic that is called nolad. Where is that? Somewhere over here. Yeah. Molid. Creating a new entity. So we'll discuss all that. And so for everything has primarily dealing with the various ones of the 39 prohibited activities as they relate to Shabbos. Muktzah is a sort of different category. It is not one of the 39 activities. Muktzah, the word muktzah literally means set aside, not for Shabbos use. That's the general understanding of the word muktzah. A lot of people have trouble with their verbs in Shabbos halacha. One of those common errors, many people will say, is it muktzah for me to do this? So that's an improper use of the term. You say, is it forbidden for me to do this, is the right term. Muktzah means, is referring to an item, an article, if it is muktzah, has it been set aside not for Shabbos use. That's what the word muktzah really means. If an item is muktzah, or if an item is not muktzah. Now, the prohibition regarding muktzah, again, is not so clear to everybody. It's the rabbis, which we'll see for what reasons they did decide, is they decided to tell us that we cannot move articles on Shabbos, which fall into a category of muktzah. That does not mean you're prohibited to touch it. Okay? Move it. Okay? Not to do with carrying it, but moving it. And we'll discuss what that means exactly. And if you do that incorrectly, you are violating a rabbinic commandment to not move muktzah items. Now, there's a number of reasons why the rabbis enacted that, as we shall see, different opinions over here. One of them is, just like we know the rabbis have told us, they understood from the prophets, that certain things, the way we do things during the week is not the way we do them on Shabbos, because Shabbos is a special day, and therefore we do things differently. So just like you speak on Shabbos different than the way you speak during the week, you walk on Shabbos different than how you walk in the week. Like on Shabbos, the weekday, you talk about business. On Shabbos, you don't talk about business, although it's not a prohibited activity to talk. On Shabbos, we don't run in general. Our walk, our gait is different. It's not an Avera, but we have to treat Shabbos different. So similarly, the items a person moves on Shabbos should be different from what he moves during the week. Okay? And considering that a person can't do any malacha, isn't allowed to do any forbidden activities on Shabbos, he might say, okay, how about if I'm going to spend the whole day moving things around? You know, is there anything biblically wrong with me moving all the furniture in my house? I could take two strong men, carry a bed, you know, from the upstairs to the downstairs, move chairs around, this and that, and all these things. Oh, you know, because you're bored. You want to do some home reorganizations. So it's not one of the 39 prohibited activities, so why can't I do it? Well, if you're going to do it, it takes away from the aura of what Shabbos is all about. That's a very important concept. It's not a question of, well, who says I can't do it? The question is it appropriate to ever do something like that on Shabbos? Is it appropriate, you know, some guy's going on a date with a girl and she's not interested in sports and he talks about sports. You know, it's like just not appropriate topic for discussion. right? So it's not appropriate to talk about certain things, to walk in a certain way, and to move items that don't really have any purpose for Shabbos at all. That's one of the reasons why they forbid it. Number two, there are certain items that if you use them, you may indeed come to transgress Shabbos, such as a hammer. Although, I want to use the hammer as a weight. You know, I want to exercise my biceps. I'm a nice 5-pound hammer. So, generally speaking, we wouldn't do that because if there's a hammer in your hand, it's not too far for you to take a nail and knock it into something. So, that's already a step away from perhaps doing something that's prohibited. The rabbis felt that some people don't do any particular work during the week. There's some people who don't work during the week. They really don't work. So how will Shabbos look different? Let's say people of leisure, wealth and leisure. So what do they do on Shabbos that's different than during the week? They don't work. Yeah, a wealthy person. They don't cook. They don't clean. They're so wealthy, people shop for them. You know. So what are you doing on Shabbos to show that Shabbos is a better day than any other day? Or different? Well, we got to, I guess, certain things you can't move. That would be a way of distinguishing that. And finally, the rabbis were concerned that if you had unfettered use of moving things in your house, you may come to carry things out of your house when there's no Eruv. So if you're used to saying, I can't move everything I want, so when you go out of the house, you will not carry things out of the house. Those are four of the primary reasons of why Muktzah was instituted. And now we're going to limit our discussion. I emphasize we're limit our discussion to the categories of muktzah which are most commonly occur in the kitchen or at the Shabbos table as they relate to the laws of Shabbos, preparing a meal. Because that was our initial first class, was koshering the home, now being able to prepare the meals without transgressing the Shabbos. So first we're going to explain some terms and explain the rules of the terms, and then we'll give you the practical applications of the terms. Okay, so there's a couple different types of, we can call it utensils or items that fall under the category of muktzah. The first is called a kli shemalachto le'isur. A kli is a utensil. Shemalachto, that its use is generally, if it would be Shabbos, would be a prohibited use. Generally speaking, if you would take this item and use it the way it's designed to be used, you would be transgressing the laws of Shabbos. So therefore, the rabbis say, you got to stay away from that item in general. All right? Such as hammers, screwdrivers, anything that the use of that would bring on a desecration of the Shabbos. So therefore, the rabbi said, don't touch these things. However, oh man, it's still the typist. I even had time to read it over, and I still make mistakes. Okay, these items may not be moved except when needed for the following purposes. So these are the exclusions. So even a hammer, you'll be able to move it on Shabbos if it falls into one of these two exceptional areas. One is called litzorach gufo. When you need the item to perform a permissible act, if no other implement is available. Let's say you have a nutcracker and you want to crack some nuts for dessert. You're looking high and low, you can't find it. And you don't know how to crack open this nut. So your husband says, well, I got a hammer in the garage. Well, a hammer is really good at cracking nuts. Maybe a little messy, but it gets the job done. So that would be called using a kli shemalachto le'iser, an item that's usually used for prohibited use. But you're now doing it for something that you need for Shabbos, and there is no other option to have it. A Jew's entitled to have some coconut or other nuts. And you need the hammer to crack it open. Now, obviously, if you have a nutcracker, don't go out of your way to get a hammer to do that. But there are times where you just don't have the item and you want to use something like that for that purpose. So then that is okay under that circumstance. Another one, which may be more common, is called Litzorech Mekomo, when you need the place on which it rests. You need the spot. Let's say, for whatever reason, before Shabbos, a hammer was left on the table. Let's say, for whatever reason, you were running behind, you didn't set the Shabbos table yet, and some people always feel, well, I could do it when my husband's away. That's not a good rule of practice at all, but some people do that. And then when you didn't realize, there's a hammer sitting right on top of the table, exactly where I'm going to put some plates. Well, in that circumstance, since you need the place in which it's at, you may remove the hammer from that area. But aside from that, you can't move these items. So you got to realize that these items can only be used under these circumstances. Or, so let's say the item's not on the table, but it's somewhere else lying around, and you don't really need that space. It just doesn't look so great to have a hammer sitting, you know, on your piano in the living room. Of course, you're not going to need the piano on Shabbos because you can't play the piano on Shabbos. But it looks kind of, you know, not so proper to have a hammer sitting on your piano. Well, too bad. You're going to have to leave it on the whole Shabbos because there's no reason for you to move that hammer. Similarly, if you just want it not to be damaged, you know, let's say you left a hammer out in the driveway and it's beginning to rain and the hammer might get damaged, you couldn't move the hammer for that purpose. All right, so that is the category of kli shemalachto le'isser that can only be moved if you need it for a permissible use or you need the spot that it's in.
So let's say it's
going to be a lot of let's says coming up. So flowers is not a klisha malachta. Hang on. So we're going to have to leave that because that's not this topic right now. We will happily answer it. There's going to be a topic that's more related to that. And we'll get to that. And if we don't get to that, then I'll take it. But right now, this is a little premature. Okay. Because flowers is not a utensil that does prohibited activities. Right, so we'll get to it. Just want to keep them away so people can remember it. Okay, so let's look at some practical applications. Pots and pans. Now let's think about this. Right, a large pot. You have an empty large pot that is primarily used for cooking and not for storage. A huge big soup pot. What would you call a huge soup pot? Well, when do you use a soup pot like that? Right, to heat it on top of the stove to cook soup. Well, that would be considered a utensil that's used for a prohibited activity on Shabbos. You couldn't use that pot to cook soup on Shabbos. So while it's empty, such a pot may not be moved unless there is a permissible use for that. So let's say you now want to store some leftovers in that pot. You could do that. Or let's say that pot is taking up a spot you don't want it to be on the countertop. You can do that. But if you just forgot to put it away and there's no need for you to move it, you don't need the spot, you just don't like looking at that big soup pot that you should have put away before Shabbos, then you got to leave it there because there's no Shabbos functionality, and the same holds true for the pot cover. Now, if for whatever reason, let's say you were using this big soup pot and to cook stuff, and you emptied it all out, but now it looks kind of gross, and it's you didn't wash it, it's been sitting there for 3 days on the counter, and it's beginning to smell a little bit, and you thought you were going to clean it away and put it away for Shabbos, now it's sitting there. Okay, if that causes a source of discomfort and embarrassment, and it may smell, then you could move it to another location because you don't want to suffer that comes from that. All right. Now, on the other hand, this big soup pot, obviously, if it has soup in it, it's not considered muksa because you're using it for a big, big pot and it can be moved with its cover for every reason, even to put it in the refrigerator. That's not a problem. Now, how about other things like Pyrex, Corningware? Small pots are commonly used for both cooking and food storage and are not muksa and may be removed for any reasons. saltless, and small pots are included in this category since they're often used to store leftovers. So those pots, then, since they're used not only for cooking, for also for storage, you can pull that out at any time. You can move it at any time. It's totally not muktzah. Now, a dishwasher, although when if you turn on the dishwasher, it's doing a prohibited activity on Shabbos, you certainly may put dishes in the dishwasher because it's serving a function of storage, which is fine. So there's no problem as long as, I don't know, I'm not up to date on the most modern dishwashers, but I imagine it could be a dishwasher if it's in the locked position. I don't know. And you open it, it may, a light may go on. I don't know. I have an old dishwasher. But I'm always suspicious of new things, and that can always sometimes happen, that, you know, if the cycle was done or whatever, and as soon as you close it and you open, a light might go on. I'm just assuming that there's no lights or anything going on. You could certainly open a dishwasher, rinse off dishes, put them away in the dishwasher. That's not a problem. All right? Small appliances, generally speaking, crackpots, urns, hot plates, similar appliances, are considered utensils of prohibited use, which means if they're not plugged in, or if they're not plugged in, you can only move it if it's in the way. Okay? Well, if it's only in the way. But otherwise, you don't move them. You know, if you want to, you know, sometimes people like to organize their kitchen. You know, they like to do that. Oh, I don't like it over here. I want it over here, this and that. Okay, but not on Shabbos, you know, if it's mukz item. But on the other hand, if the crock pot is on and you got food in it, you know, and you need to just move it a little bit, you know, or something like that, or the urn, well, obviously that's part of the use of the permitted use that you're using, or the hot plate, you're just moving it a little bit over, that is fine. That's part of the permitted use that you are using with it. And finally, a blech, well, not finally, but a blech that I've found out that nobody uses a blech anymore. But anyway, it's not muktzah in case you wanted to know. All right? Brooms. Okay, soft bristle brooms are not muktzah because they can be used on Shabbos. They can't, a soft bristle brooms, in other words, a broom that will, the bristle will not break off if it's used. It's not, most can use it, but brooms with hard bristles which break easily are considered utensils of prohibited use and therefore can only be used when we allow them to be done. Similarly with sponges and mops are utensils of prohibited use. Okay, any questions just on utensils of prohibited use?
If you have forgotten to unload your dishwasher, are you allowed to take clean things out to make room for...
That's a good question. I would assume you could, because dishes are not muktzah. Dishes right. are not muktzah, period.
So you could theoretically
just put them away for no reason. But that might be considered preparing for after Shabbos. But if you want to put those dishes in there, you could move them out. That's not a problem. Okay? That is utensils of prohibited use. Now we have another item called muktzah machmas gufo, which means inherently muktzah. What does inherently muktzah mean? It means an item which has no practical function on Shabbos. For example, let's say you're walking in the front yard and you see a couple of rocks on the floor over there. And you just want to pick up a rock, you know, and just play with it, you know, whatever. I'm just, you know, you can't, because a rock is inherently muktzah, you know, because there's no use of a rock. Why would you need a piece of rock? Empty nutshells. Before Shabbos, empty nutshells. Well, I mean, we'll talk more. You know, there's no use for it. So, you know, there's no practical use for it. Therefore, it's muktzah. Certainly you just can't touch, you know. So let's say you're walking with your 5-year-old kid. Kids have a tendency, I don't know why, to like to pick up rocks and throw them. I mean, that's just boys more than girls. You know what I mean? Just pick up a rock and throw it. And if it hits somebody, no, they don't care. They don't think about it. So we teach them don't throw rocks. But if they do it on Shabbos, you can get them on a religious grounds and you can say, it's muksa. Oh, it's muksa. I can't touch it. Because it's, so that I always, I don't, it's not a joke, but, you know, you find misguided religious Jews in Eretz Yisrael who throw rocks at people who drive into their neighborhoods, you know. I'm not saying it, I'm just saying they really can't do that from halachic reasons because they're in Hamas, unless, judge them favorably, unless you designate those rocks before Shabbos to throw them at people. You know, I'm not recommending it. I'm not approving of it. I'm just saying. And could be there's a lot of them that put out 50 rocks and they say, just in case. And I'm but that's the general idea. Something that has no functionality is going to be a problem. So now where has this become practical applications? Well, we'll see all kinds of practical applications. How about inedible raw food? Inedible raw food that's you've got in the cupboard or wherever you're storing stuff is considered inherently muksa since has absolutely no function on Shabbos. Flour. Does flour have any function on Shabbos? No. Yeast, dough, uncooked spaghetti, rice, beans, raw potatoes, raw fish, meat, poultry, all these things may not be moved at all on Shabbos. Right? Because they have no functionality. All right? Other raw food, though, that is edible is not muksa. Even foods which were purchased for cooking are not muksa if people occasionally eat them raw, like cauliflower and broccoli. Because there's some people eat it raw. So it's not considered a muksa item. Okay? Raw eggs are not muksa. Because there are people who occasionally eat them raw, chazanim, to gargle their throats and things like that. Okay, now, here is the issue here. So, when moving food from the freezer, okay, this is where it can become an issue. You want to pull out your ice cream cake that's in the freezer, so a well-prepared person will make sure that it's not sitting behind three frozen roasts. Mm. Raw frozen roasts, because now you got to negotiate those frozen roasts, which are inherently muktza. So if you're going to take anything out of the freezer on Shabbos, make sure it's unfettered. There's nothing's in the way from that. Okay? So you should avoid moving aside any raw muktza, which is in the way. However, in case of necessity, one is permitted to move muktza foods in the freezer if it's a necessity. If the muktza foods make it impossible to reach the foods in the freezer, the food may be moved. Similarly, if your freezer would break down, that would be considered a necessity to avoid a financial loss, so the muktza items can be moved. We'll further talk about other options here, but I'm just saying in general, these items, you know, can't be moved. So you leave it at that. That's inherently muktza items. But now we go to one where it's going to be probably the most applicable of all, inherently muktza food waste. Food waste which is not fit for consumption, such as eggshells, nutshells, pits, bones, is considered inherently muktza and may not be moved on Shabbos. So how do you clear away leftover shells and pits on Shabbos? Okay, this one may be the most practical of all the situations. Let's start with eggshells. What do I mean? Okay, you're making egg salad. Again, better to make the egg salad before Shabbos. But if you didn't, we've already discussed how you can mix the mayonnaise last week. We discussed some other things. But what about you're going to peel some eggs on Shabbos? Especially if, let's say, you want to serve, people may want to eat hard-boiled eggs. We've already, I don't know if we learned it here, but there's a Kabbalistic thing. We don't leave unpeeled, peeled eggs overnight. There's a whole discussion over that, and some people, for mystical reasons, spirits of impurity rest on eggs that haven't been peeled that stay overnight. We generally don't do that. There's ways out of it, though, but that's not the main topic here. But anyways, the person wants to peel it on Shabbos. So really, ideally, it's best to peel eggs right over a trash can. Peel the eggs, it goes in the garbage, and you're done. Because you don't have to deal with that. Not to say it can't be dealt with, but that's the simplest solution. Where this is impractical, one is advised to follow the procedure described below for nutshells, which is coming up. Nutshells, it's less likely you're going to do that beforehand because usually people like crack the nuts when they're sitting at the table. You're passing around the nuts and the person cracks the nuts and eats the nuts. Now I got all these nutshells all over that are now inherently muktzah. What are you going to do with them? So these are your options. Shells which contain some food remnant, there's still some food in it. As often the case with walnuts. Walnuts, you could take a few pieces out, and there's still some walnut in the shell there. They're not muktzah because there's still some food in it. So they're not muktzah. When completely devoid of food, nutshells are inherently muktzah. When nuts are served at a meal, leftover shells which contain no food may not be cleared off the table by hand. Instead, one of the following procedures should be used. Okay, we will see a little bit later that the prohibition of moving muktzah is prohibited when it's done in what we would call a normal fashion. Normal fashion means you take something with your hand and move it. Okay, an unnormal fashion can manifest itself in many ways. Although I can't, well, this isn't really muktzah. This is what's muktzah. Okay, let's take this. This is turned off. Here's a good example. All right, this is what kind of utensil is this? Kli shemalachto le'isur. It's a utensil that's used to a prohibited activity on Shabbos. All right. So, you know, if for whatever reason I don't want this on the table and if I would not be allowed under certain circumstances to pick it up, okay, this is not prohibited at all for muktzah because I'm not moving it the conventional way. It's moved with a shinoi, and therefore I could do that all the time. All right. So that's something to know. Or if I take something else to move it, that's also not transgressing muktzah because I'm not moving it in a normal way. That's always a good thing to know because it'll play out in many other cases of muktzah. You know, for example, if you're having a button in your coat, again, I don't want to get off the topic, but if you have a button that pops on Shabbos, that button is muktzah. You cannot pick it up on Shabbos. What am I going to do? It's sitting right in the middle of the living somewhere. It could get lost in it. So then you could take your foot and kick it to the side, let's say, by the wall, so no one will get to it. So I'm just saying that not indirect ways is a way to avoid some of these problems. So therefore, shell. So here is one. There's a number of reasons, things. Some of the reasons will come a little bit later. And they say, I don't know why that's so. We'll give some of the reasons a little later. So shell the nuts over a plate, which has a little morsel of food on the plate also. And once you do that, the food is still legitimate. Now, I'm talking about a big challah, something that you may even throw away, but it is like a little half a piece of challah, so it's on your plate. So then you could take the entire plate and move it into the trash. If you shell them on the plate, then take the plate and throw it out, then you're not moving it with your hand. If shells spilled on the table, or even they didn't, and one needs the place of the shells, in order to serve other food, let's say, you know, Friday night, and that's very common, so a lot of people get together after the meal, and they just start schmoozing and eating peanuts, or other types, or what do you call sunflower seeds. And by the time the four guys are finished, there's a pile this big of sunflower seeds all over the table. And now the next morning, the wife wants to serve the table, and she can't serve the table because there's sunflower seeds all over. Okay, so now you need the place over there, right? Or you just want the table cleaned in honor of Shabbos. It looks disgusting that they're all over there. So it's permissible to use a napkin or a utensil like a knife. I don't know why the word egg got in there. I have no idea what spelling mistake I made on that. To push the shells onto a plate or dustpan, which can then be emptied into the trash can. So what have you done? You've avoided touching it. right? So you've moved it away onto a plate, and then from the plate you're throwing it out into the trash can. If the table is full of shells, constituting a source of discomfort, where it's really gross, then there's a much bigger leniency than you can clear off the shells even by hand. So that's a general rule. So the general rule of thumb is it's always so it depends a lot of how much you got over there. If it's just three or four peanuts, you know, it's hard to make a case that you really need that area cleaned off, although you might not like it being there. Well, then you have to be eating it over a plate that's got something else you want to throw out. Let's say some leftovers food that's legitimately there. So you would do it that way, or you're going to have a lot more, then you've got these other ideas. Pits, inedible pits, are inherently muktzah and should be cleared off in the same way as shells. Pits which have some food remnants attached, like a peach pit, are not muktzah because of the food. So if you want to throw out a peach that didn't finish all the flesh, then it's not muktzah. You could just throw it out. Bones, same idea. Any bones which have some meat attached to them, or which are themselves edible, let's say a chicken bone, you could really eat the marrow in that, they're not muktzah at all. Because they got a little bit of meat left over, you can eat the marrow bones. Now, I just threw this in because a lot of dogs lately. In a neighborhood, again, I only know dogs from like 50 years ago. I don't know, maybe dogs don't eat bones and chew on bones anymore. I don't know this. It's such a snowflake generation. Could be the dogs are snowflake dogs. And we say, we only take, you know, Maple. Special blend, you know. But anyway, but in a neighborhood where dogs are common, bones fit for canine consumption are not muktzah, even to one who does not own a dog. Okay, so there's not muktzah at all. Bones fit for neither human or canine consumption are inherently muktzah, may be cleared away only in the manner described above. So again, so if you got a plate of food, and that's why, you know, Jews always leave a little left over. So you have to leave like a little half a piece of kugel on the plate, so then even though you got bones on the plate, you can just carry it off because you got a little piece of kugel on there, or don't eat the whole bone, like leave a little bit of meat on the bone. You have some people who just love devouring these bones and they suck the marrow out, and you all got left this momish, you know, worse than the prophecy of Yechezkel's dry bone prophecy. So then they got to be cognizant of a permissible halachic way to remove it in an indirect way. Yeah?
Okay, so if you have bones...
Who?
If you have bones in the garbage that's on your floor, and your dog...
What, in the garbage that's on your floor?
Okay, like, you have a garbage can for food waste on your floor.
Uh-huh.
In the kitchen.
Yes.
And it has a lid on.
Yes.
But the dog can still get in and eat the bones. Can you move...
Well, I'll tell you better. Well, why do you want to move it? Let's understand, why do you want to... Do you want to take out the garbage?
The dog gets into them every Shabbos and starts eating the bones and then runs
up. What, he makes a mess?
Yeah. Sometimes.
Well, if you want, if the garbage disturbs you, you can just take the garbage out.
Okay, so
the garbage is not moving. If you have a full garbage in the kitchen and you don't like the garbage being there and it smells, which many garbages do, forget about the dog. You can just take it out.
Okay, so that's not much to do that.
You could take it out, right? Okay, where am I up to now? Did I finish five?
Yeah,
finish five. Okay, fruit and vegetable peels, edible peels, like apple peels, are not muktzah. Again, peels fit for canine consumption are also not muktzah in a neighborhood where dogs are common. Peels that are not fit for humans or dogs are inherently muktzah, may only be moved in the manner described above in point three. Again, you'd have to, if you want to have an apple, you want to peel the apple, you should have to peel the apple on a plate or where that's got some other food that you might be throwing out. Or, you'll have to find a place to, or you could peel, you know, if you have another apple, a whole apple that's there, and you got the peel over there, you could take it out the same way, or in the other ways that we mentioned. Okay, now comes a very common case here, the term basis ledover ha'asur.
Rabbi, can I just...
Yes.
With the fruit, if you're cutting up fruit for a fruit platter, if you just leave some fruit on a peel, then it's not muktzah.
If you're leaving fruit...
So you're on the peel. Cutting a mango or a melon. If you leave some fruit on the peel...
Then for sure it's not muktzah. And it's pretty likely you will.
Right.
Because it depends, how generous you are. Some people cut way below Don't leave anything there. But most people are more gently. So if you're leaving, in other words, if you could theoretically take the peel and eat a little bit of the fruit, then it's not mukts at all. Okay, so we're not going to get to your plants in the next subject. But so again, ask me your question about the plant now.
It's not a plant. Fresh cut flowers.
So fresh cut flowers are not a problem. They may be moved. They are not mukta at all. Okay? A plant is mukta. With earth, with real earth, is mukta. So you should pretty much decide where you want it before Shabbos. And like I said in a different class, and remember, you don't want your guests to bring you plants. If you bring secular people to your home, you hope they will not bring you plants. Because you can't move them once they put them wherever they put them. You can't even take it from them. So just in case you have a secular relative and they say, oh, a beautiful plant, you can go, oh, well, put it down over there, please. And that's how you have to deal with it. Otherwise, it's real mukza. So you've got a problem.
So if the fresh cut flower is not mukza.
No.
No, and it kind of like comes out of a vase. You can put it back? No problem?
You can't add water to it.
No, but I mean, you can
Can't put them in water if they're giving you plants. No, if they're giving you a flower that's not in water.
With one flower and it's moved up. Like you can re-put it back in the.
Well, if it's in the thing, yeah.
The flower falls out the vase.
Yeah, you can put it back in, but you can't put flowers in water.
Yeah.
That you can't do. Okay, now the candlestick dilemma. Okay, basis means a base. Lidover for something or usser that is prohibited. Okay, this is probably the most common muktzah issue we have. Okay, and the rule is simple. An item that is used to support a muktzah article has the same halachic status as the article which it supports. If a muktzah item is on it, and it's as support and a base, then it has the same status as the muktzah item. It's just as muktzah as the item that's on top of it. Furthermore, an item that served as a base for muktzah, here's the critical point, at the onset of Shabbos, retains its muktzah status for the entire Shabbos, even if the muktzah article is removed. There's a rule that once something is muktzah on the advent of Shabbos, it remains that way. So if something is a base for muktzah as Shabbos begins, even if the item comes off later, it remains a base for mukta regardless. That's the rule. So the two most famous examples are candlesticks directly on a table. We'll talk about that. And then candlesticks on a tray. Those are the two most common examples. There could be others, but regarding the Shabbos table. So therefore, before we even begin, therefore I always preface, it's always best to put your candlesticks not... Okay, let me tell you like this. On the one hand, there's halachic basis to put candlesticks on a table. Why? Because candles on the table is a beautiful thing. It's an honor of the Shabbos. It creates shalom bayis, and it is a very nice thing to have candles on your table. So, you know, that is a positive. That being said, if you need to change the tablecloths, in a mess tablecloth, you're going to have some challenges in removing it. So unless you do it in a specific way, or more than that, even moving tables. So let's take it very slowly here. Therefore, the best thing to avoid muktzah issues is to light the candlesticks on places that you're not eating on. Let's say the dresser or whatever. You have a spot that it just stays there. You don't need to move it. It's going to stay there the whole Shabbos. In our house, we have this nice little table that's right by the front window of the living room. That's where my wife lays. The candles stays there forever. We never move it. And that's all there is to it. Not that you have to do it that way. First of all, we did it when the kids were young, because you don't want to have kids and candles at the same table. Not a smart thing. And then we just left it there. But in case you do it otherwise, okay, that's why you'll notice a lot of things. You'll see. So anyway, a table on which kindled candlesticks were left at the onset of Shabbos. So just for the sake of relevance, how many people light their candles on their Shabbos table? Only one. So this is not so relevant. Okay, but we'll mention it anyway. Is that why you don't light it on the tables? Because you already know this. Okay, so we won't have to spend that much time on this. All right, well, we'll just do it to make sure. You can go to somebody else's house to tell them, right? So anyway, is considered a base for a muktzah item. Now, what is the real muktzah article? It's not so much, it's what? It's the flame. The flame is muktzah. That's a fire. That's muktzah. So now the candlestick is basing this flame. And it's the candlesticks on the table. So now the table now is a base for the candlestick. Okay? Now, even after the candles burn out and the muktzah is gone, but still the candlesticks and the table are a base for that. So, now what's the issue? Let's say you'd like to move the table. I want to move the table around or whatever. Well, how can you move the table if there's a muktzah item on the table? The candlesticks are muktzah. I cannot move the table. So the rule is like this. If a significant non-muktzah item, such as challah, is also on the table when Shabbos arrives, the table does not get the status as a base for a muktzah article, but rather a base for muktzah and non-muktzah at the time, which may be moved in certain cases. That's why we have the custom to have the challah on the table before you light candles. If you're lighting candles on the table, you want to have challahs on the table, as the challahs on the table will be the non-muktzah item that will neutralize, so to speak, the base of the table. And a base for muktzah and non-muktzah may be moved. For what? Litzorech gufo, if you need the table in a different location. Or litzorech makom, if one needs to make use of the area on which the table rests. Okay? So now you could move the table. Let's say, you know, you don't want the table over here. You have much less guests for lunch. You want to move the table away. You don't want to have this huge second table next to the other table. It makes it so difficult. Now, when possible, you'd like to want to shake the muktzah item off, if you can, but you don't have to. So that's if the candlesticks are on a table. Now, how about candlesticks on a tray? Okay, now, and let's say you'd like to move the tray off the table. You don't want to move the table, you want to move the tray off the table. The tray is considered a base for a muktzah article. Now, so therefore, if you've got a candles with a candle on with a tray, so how am I going to, and it's got a tablecloth that's dirty. So how am I going to take it off the table? Well, pretty hard. I don't know how you're going to take it off the table. You can't move it. So the only leniency you have, according to some poskim, if one places an item of significance on the tray on Erev Shabbos, I guess you'd have to know you plan on moving that tray after the meal, then the tray is considered a base for muktzah and non-muktzah, which may be moved if one needs to use the area in which the tray rests. This would enable you to change the tablecloth by lifting the tray containing both the candlesticks and the challah, because now you're carrying the tray. It's a base for the challah and for the candlesticks. That's the only not everybody agrees with that leniency, but there's enough good rabbis who say so, and therefore you can. Although it might look a little weird to have piece of challah on your candlestick tray, but that would be a way to do this. And now, especially if we need to change the tablecloth, there's only one other way that this can be done, but it's a really tricky way, and I would only advise if you're really stuck in a really terrible position. It's a trick. Let's say this is the candlestick tray with the candlestick, and I got it. Here, you want to just pass me one of those, just for demonstrative purposes. Okay, let's say this is part of a much larger tablecloth. Okay, this is the whole tablecloth, right? And here's the candlestick, and the tablecloth is a mess. So what could you do? Well, I said you can't move muktzah, right? So what if if a candlestick tray would be a better, here. Because you can hold the, usually there's something that juts out by candles. I don't have anything jutting out over here, right? But you could like hold on to the candlestick and have somebody just slip that out without you letting this move. is if I'm holding this, I'm not moving. Remember, you can't move it. I'm not moving, I'm just holding it. If it just slips the tablecloth out, then you can take it off. And you know, if you want to be, try to, you know, find a tricky way to get it back on, you'd have to be very deft in order to, like with the side of your hand, kind of lift it up a little and put the table on it. But that's under a real pressed situation. There is always a solution, but it would be quite difficult to do that. But, you know, we've had to do it. I think we had to do it once in the shul. I'm trying to remember once when we had, I know when we have the problem. We have it every year on Shabbos Hanukkah. Mm. Where do we light the menorah? Where do we light it? On one of the tables. On the south end of the shul, on the table. And we have the tablecloths. They're set for Shabbos, Shal Shudas, and this and that. So then, but we have to take off one tablecloth to make sure, and there's one underneath. So how are we able to do that? You know, so you just hold, that doesn't move, and just slip the tablecloth out, and then you're able to move it out. Now, if you know that, then you're real, you know, all the tricks of Mozart. That's a real pro. But you got to be careful, because if you really move it, then you're doing something wrong. So you have to be very cautious, you're not going to do that. Okay, and just as a final postscript, as I said, there are ways of moving muktzah that is not conventional ways of muktzah, which are always helpful. So let's say, for example, if a muktzah item is on top of a non-muktzah item, right, on top of a non-muktzah item, it's permitted to move the muktzah indirectly if one intent is to use the non-muktzah item, but not if one intends is to move the muktzah. In other words, let's say something's sitting on, let's say you got something sitting on your book, right? And you want your book. You don't want the item. So just tilt the book and the thing falls off. And now you didn't directly move it, and therefore you're able to use it. It's permitted to move a muktzah item with one's body, as I described before. It's permissible to blow on muktzah to make it move if it's for a permissible purpose. So how about a bug that's crawling on your dining room table? What would you say? Is it muktzah or not? And what kind of muktzah is it? It is muktzah. What kind of muktzah? What do we say? Inherently muktzah. There is no Shabbos use for it. Oh, God, get that bug off the table. I'm going nuts. I was going to think I'm a terrible host. Right? So you got a lot of options. If it's a little bug, you just go, and you blow it off, and it's off the table. If you're not that winded, you could just take almost anything and flick it off the table.
But you'll kill it, though.
No, you won't. Nah, you're not going to kill those bugs. They can stand up to a lot of abuse. The only way you kill it is by smashing it. Those guys, you know, even if you... You know, really, you could maybe do this, too. If you're a guy, guys would like this. Go, bing, and watch it.
Little mosquitoes, then.
Watch it. What?
The little mosquitoes, or those little bugs, they crush very easily.
So you're not crushing them. They bounce really good. You'd be surprised.
And ladybugs.
Guys know this. You know, when you're little boys, you weren't afraid of bugs. You played around with them. You tested how far they could bend before they would break and all those things. Women don't know about these things, but you can definitely do that. Okay? Additionally, let's say there's an item that it's hard to move, but it really looks ugly and you don't want it around. It's possible to cover a muktzah item with a vessel. Even the vessel will touch the muktzah as long as placing the cover on the muktzah will not move it. So if you got that hammer on the piano, if you have a little nice cloth you want to put over the piano to cover up the hammer, you could do that. Now, here's an interesting thing, though. What if... Either by mistake or not, let's say you picked up a kli shemalachto le'isser, okay, and it's in your hands. Now, there could be two reasons why it's in your hands. Let's say you needed that hammer to crack open some nuts. All right, so we said you could use that. Now, problem is, what about when you're finished? It's in your hand. What do you do then? So... As long as you were able to take it initially in a permitted way, you could put it back wherever you want to put it back. So if you had to go into the garage to get the hammer, and you chopped up the nuts, whatever, and now you're finished. Okay, now you can, and it's in your hand, you can put it back. But if you're finished and you put it down, you cracking any more nuts? No. You sure? Is that your final answer? Yes, it's my final answer. Mukta! Now you can only move it if you need the space. If you don't need space, not. So, therefore, if you are using this thing to do that, then, you know, be smart. If this is your last nut that you're cracking, crack it, get up, and put it away because it's still permitted to handle it. If, on the other hand, you picked up muktzah in a forbidden way, or one has an absolute muktzah item in one's hand, you're not given the luxury to put it away, and you got to drop it on the spot. Okay, now if it's sitting on the floor and is a danger to somebody, then you can kick it to the side. But to move it in that way, you cannot do that. All right, that is muktzah. Okay, now there is one last smaller topic. We're moving really quickly over here. You're going to get out early tonight. I call it other related practical applications. It's not exactly muktzah, but it's not one of the 39 prohibited activities either. It's called molid. Molid means, terrible typo coming up here. Molid means, one second, creating a new entity. Not creasing. Creating a new entity. It's forbidden to transform an item from solid to liquid form or vice versa. For doing so, one produces a new object. In other words, you're changing it from a liquid to a solid or a solid to a liquid. The rabbis prohibited that. Now, where does this come into play? Freezing and defrosting certain objects on Shabbos could be subject to this prohibition. So again, the general idea is you like to make sure not to have to do that on Shabbos, but sometimes there's no choice, as we'll see, and you have to do that. So there's ways you could do it or not. And again, the Sephardim win out tonight, and they get one leniency that the Ashkenazim don't have. And the big debate is there's many ways you can defrost or dissolve things. One way is, really three ways, so to speak. One way is if you actively try to dissolve it by smashing and breaking it up. Another one would be putting it actively near a source of that could make it melt quicker. And one way is just to do nothing and let it defrost on its own. So let's take a look at, I'm going to just, since it's pretty complicated, the details, I just want to get to the practical examples of it. Okay, how about dissolving frozen liquids? Okay, so you have, it's a liquid, it's a frozen liquid, as you'll see in a moment. So liquids may be defrosted at room temperature. Just take it out and let it defrost. That's for sure, for everyone, that's not a problem. But for Ashkenazim, but should not be placed in a hot area near an oven to rapidly defrost it. Now, again, whenever I mention this for the balance of this evening, but not in a way that if you left it there long enough, it would be Yad Soledispo. Because remember we said it, you can't put something in the Yad Soledispo position. But you could put something near a warm area. It will never get Yad Soledispo, but it will melt much quicker. So that you should not do so. By putting it in a hot area, let's say near the oven. And here's where the Sephardim are lenient in this area, where they can put it near a warmer area for that. However, once partially melted, once the item's a little bit melted and there's already a little bit liquid there, they may be moved to a hot area to dissolve completely, even according to the Ashkenazim. In cases of necessity, let's say the guests came and you forgot all about it and you need it really quickly, liquids may be initially dissolved in a hot area. However, crushing or shaking them is forbidden even in cases of necessity unless immersed in liquid from beforehand. And the most practical application is coming up here. Again, assuming there's people who make juice from concentrate. Is anybody who still does that? Wow. I wonder who's buying all those cans at Sobeys.
they sell them?
What?
I haven't seen them.
They do. Okay, anyway, or anything else like that. So we might as well just go through it. So let's say to dissolve frozen concentrate. Well, we should follow the procedure we mentioned above. The simplest one is just let it out, let it melt. But you may not have time for that. In addition, one may immerse the concentrate in water. See, the problem, when you put the concentrate in water, it's already in a liquid. If you have it frozen and changed from solid to liquid, that could probably be a problem under certain circumstances. But if you're already putting it into water, let's say you're going to mix the concentrate with water. So guess what? Take the whole clump, look how it's just put it into the water right away. Then you could put it near the oven to dissolve, even if you're an Ashkenazi, because it's already in the water, right? But you still should not crush the concentrate or stir the mixture until it's completely dissolved. However, in a case of necessity, one may stir the mixture or crush the frozen concentrate while submerged in water. So if you're really in a bind, you will need to make orange juice fast. The guests have come. It's really stressed. So you could put the concentrate, slip the whole thing into the water, and stir very fast in the water like that and to make the concentrate. That can be done. Okay, now what about the reverse? What about freezing liquids for storage? Okay. Now, liquids may not be frozen on shelf storage except to prevent spoilage. So if you leave it out, now if you can put it in the fridge and it doesn't spoil, put it in the fridge. But now to cause it to freeze, only if it would spoil, then you can put it in there. So let's get to some that are a little more relevant. Making ice cubes on Shabbos. All right, that's probably, and again, for some it might not be a question that these halachas, you know, are getting obsolete. Because why? Because people have ice cube makers, right? And if you don't have an ice, who does anybody still make ice cubes?
We do on Pesach.
Okay. So first of all, there's some. Before I forget, there's some other issues. If you have an ice cube maker on Shabbos, okay, you have to, if you want to take ice cubes from it, you must disable it before Shabbos. Okay, and many of them have an on and off button. It becomes another item to put on your to-do list. It's just a little button you press off. Now you could take all the ice. Well, let me. Okay, I'm jumping the gun here. I'm really not explaining it well. Normally, these things, you push something underneath and the ice comes out. That, as far as I know, you can never do that because that's causing an electric current to be set off. All the stuff that's on the door of your fridge, that's off limits before Shabbos. So there, many of them can disable them, that it's not going to give anything off. So that's number one. But you still want some ice. So number two, before Shabbos, you disable the thing to make any more ice, turn it off. Now, you have to be a little bit, again, you know, Robin, I know you don't like taking things with your hand, right? But here, the only thing you could do is you got to take your hand into the box there where the ice is there and take it out or with a spoon or something. It goes much quicker with a hand. A hand is amazing. You can take like 12 ice cubes, just grab it and put it in, right? You wash your hand before it, you know, but then you could do that. And that's how you would take ice if you have ice in that way. Now, what happens if you forget to turn off that thing? Is there still a way to take ice? Well, I've figured out with trial error, there is a way. What's the way? You got to outsmart the machine. So what do? So you got this, the storage bin that's full of ice. Now, what normally happens, you take out ice, it senses there's ice missing. Boom, it drops down more ice. You can't do that, right? But what you can do is you take a little hand towel and you take 5 ice cubes out, put a hand towel right on top of it, of the thing. And now it registers it's full. So it's not going to drop any ice cubes. You follow? It's because as far as it's concerned, it's full. Okay, but obviously it's much better to just disable it. Anyway, so for those back living in the cave ages, and you still do want to make ice cubes on Shabbos, so some poskim rule that it's permitted to make ice cubes for Shabbos use, even without a particular necessity. You can do that, even not under a press situation. That's a lenient opinion that many people agree to. Other poskim rule that one should not make ice cubes for Shabbos except in cases of necessity. Always look at that as funny, because when else would you do it unless it's a necessity? You know, if you need, it's a hot day, the kids are hot, you want to have ice cubes, right? One may return an ice tray to the freezer on Shabbos, even if it will not need any more ice until after Shabbos. In other words, let's say there's a tray, you want to take five or six. Well, really, what you really could do is you could make the ice cubes on Shabbos, according to most opinions. Take them out, take out five, six ice cubes, put them back. That's not a problem. One should not make frozen ices. That's a whole different. Water, we're much more lenient because it's really nothing special. When you want to make frozen ices, that already you should avoid doing that on Shabbos, unless there's a great necessity. Otherwise, you should not do that. Now is an interesting one, though. What if you just take ice cubes out to serve for guests on Shabbos? You have a nice little bowl, right? You put 20 ice cubes on there. Right? Is that how people give ice to your guests? Right. So there could be a little problem, because what happens? What if they don't take all the ice cubes? They melt. Now the ice cubes have changed from ice to water, which can be a problem. Well, the Sephardim, again, get another leniency. They have no problem with that. You just put the ice cubes out and let them melt away. You have nothing to worry about. Ashkenazim, there is more of a debate there. And generally speaking, if you know, you should not leave it in such a situation that it's going to melt. So it's the only solutions are either you put it out there and you make sure that all the ice gets taken very quickly. Now, remember, once the ice is in the drink, you don't have to worry about it melting. If you have Coke or whatever, any drink you have, you put ice in it. The problem is you don't want the ice turning into water. But if the ice is in a liquid, so when the ice melts, it's still a liquid. It doesn't go from solid to liquid. It's a solid in a liquid. So you never see it melting into the liquid. So that's never a problem. You can always put ice into a drink. That's not the problem. The problem is if you just have ice in a bowl and now it's becoming melting and liquid. That's where you could have a problem. So either kind of pass it around and make sure it's all emptied out, or the only other solution I can give you is, it doesn't look so adequate, but put a little water, let's say a certain degree of water in, and then put the ice in. Because then whatever melts is just melting right into the water. That way you'd avoid the problem completely. It'd be an interesting conversation to say, that's funny. I never saw anybody give me ice with water in it. But that avoids that issue. Now, quite often, if they have people really like ice, you just pass it around and make sure it's all taken and you're finished. Or put the leftover ice in a pitcher or something. But that is the only potential hazard there. Okay, and the final topic is dry foods. Now, dry foods is the least of our problems. Why? Because a frozen dry food and a non-frozen dry food doesn't look any different, and you haven't changed it from one form to another. It's basically been solids into liquids, liquids into solids, but solids into solids, generally speaking, cannot be a problem. And therefore, let's take good examples of fully cooked or fully baked challah, chicken, kugel. Let's see, any food you've frozen away that's there. So if it's a completely dry food, so it can be frozen or defrosted, even near an oven for Shabbos use. Of course, not to get to Yatzah lettuce bowl. So it's a frozen challah you could take out on Shabbos, put it right next to the hot plate or whatever. Really, a challah you could even put on the hot plate because there's no liquid involved. So that's bechlal not a problem. Really, any of those that are completely dry, you could take a frozen kugel out on Shabbos and just put it out, and it can be defrosted even near an oven on Shabbos. So there's no problems with that. Now, a food that contains gravy is subject to the same restrictions as a liquid, as we said before. We're not going to put the liquid right near a flame, to make it to dry it very, very quickly. Although we said the Sephardim are lenient in this area. So the Sephardim, so let's say you've got a frozen chicken with a little bit of liquid, that's When you froze it, it had a little liquid in there. Okay, so there's a number of things you want to be cognizant of. Okay, let's say the liquid is going to melt, but not get to Yad Soledes Bo. So the Sephardim have no problem with that. The Ashkenazim really should not put, unless it's a very necessary situation, then you could put it there. But otherwise, you should just have it defrost on its own. That's what we're saying. A food that contains gravy. Yeah, we said meat with congealed fat should not be placed in a hot area to dissolve the fat initially. Dry food that's coated with some ice. Let's say you have the challah, it's a little bit of ice on top of the challah. Preferably have the ice removed before it's defrosted in a hot area, or just blow the ice off, or even brush the ice off, as it is not muktzah. Okay, any questions? Yes. That's unusual. I'm finishing a few minutes early for a change.
Men like to have scotch, right?
Scotch? Like, really? So that's not a problem at all?
No, I know that.
So what's the problem?
If the ice is not finished...
So just put some water at the bottom of the thing.
You can go and put... If you take a bucket of ice and not all the ice is used and you've...
So I'm saying...
Can you just throw it out or...
I'm trying to... Play the scenario out. You put the bucket out with ice, right?
And now it's... And I forgot to put water and the ice wasn't finished.
Okay, so you could take the ice out.
That ice probably will melt in the freezer.
Yeah, you could take the ice out from the freezer.
And when you buy, I don't have an ice maker. If I buy a bag of ice, are you allowed to crush it?
Because you're not melting it. See, the things like this, what you can't do is, let's say the orange juice concentrate. So when you're smashing it, you are melting it. I mean, whatever, you know what I mean? You're deforming it. The ice, you're not really, you can't, let's say, crush ice on Shabbos. You're not crushing ice, you're just breaking ice. So breaking ice is not crushing it. So that you could, what do you want to throw it on the ground or whatever, take a hammer and... however you do it, that's not a problem. It would be like taking it and crushing it would not be allowed to do that. So in the future, the best thing is, put a little water at the bottom, and therefore whatever will melt automatically is going into the water. There's already some water over there. So that is the easiest solution. If you forget, it doesn't change the fact that ice is still good ice. The problem is you kind of transgressed a little to allow the ice to turn into water. That was the problem.
And you can never drink that ice water, right?
I don't know about who would want to drink it. It's like...
That's cold water.
I'd have to double check on that. I think you could even drink that.
But if you're going to serve a pitcher of water with ice, you put the water first, then the ice.
No, either way.
It doesn't matter.
You're putting the water in right away, right?
So
the problem is, ice does not melt to any appreciable degree, at least for a few minutes. So as long as, let's say you're giving someone a drink. So, yeah, you like most will put ice in before the drink and not drink in before the ice, right? So, but if you're serving someone Coke and you're putting in three pieces of ice and now you're pouring the Coke, that's not a problem. If you're, in the Bahamas, wherever in Florida, and it's 95 degrees, and you put the ice on, you wait 5 minutes, now you got a problem. So, but otherwise, as long as there's liquid there, and the ice is melting into the liquid, there is not a problem. Okay, next week, I'm trying to get this Thursday morning class in coordination with the Monday night class, but I think we want to talk about Lashon Hara at the table. Okay, because that's the most treif thing you could serve at your Shabbos table would be Lashon Hara. Okay, Shkayach, everybody.